Blog Talk Radio.
Arabati bati. Kami bala baka yami tali allo anda bati manga
Good morning. Welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keith. That was singer Gigi in her song, Bati. I want to thank you so much for listening. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keith. You can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keith. Also, I want to encourage you to send me an email. I'd like to hear from you. You can email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. Right now, we're going to be speaking with Ethiopian filmmaker Iman Dimisi. He has a wonderful film he's trying to work on, and he has several other films he's already produced. Dead Weight, a narrative feature, Twilight Revelations episodes in the life and times of Emperor Haile Selassie, and Tumult is another film that's been in 40 international film festivals. So I believe he's on the line here. I want to pick up the call.
Hello, Joy. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. How are
good
you?
Good morning.
Say Ndimin Ale or Dananin?
Indemnesh Dananing, Diri Miskin.
That is my attempt at Amharic.
Well, that's a very good start.
Thank you so much for calling in this morning.
Thank you for having me on your show.
I just want to read a little quote. This is from Haile Selassie. Actually, he did a speech at the United Nations. That until the philosophy which holds one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned, that until there are no longer first-class and second-class citizens of any nation, that until the color of a man's skin is no more significant than the color of his eyes, that until the basic human rights are equally guaranteed to all without regard to race, that until that day, the dream of lasting peace and world citizenship and the rule of international morality will remain but a fleeting illusion, to be pursued but never attained, and until the ignoble but unhappy regimes that hold our brothers in Angola, in Mozambique, and in South Africa in subhuman bondage have been toppled and destroyed, until bigotry and prejudice and malicious and inhuman self-interest have been replaced by understanding and tolerance and goodwill, until all Africans stand and speak as free human beings, equal in the eyes of Almighty, until that day, the African continent shall not know peace. That is an English translation of a speech by Haile Selassie delivered in 1963 to the United Nations. I bring that up because you have one of your works, Twilight Revelations, dealing with the life and times of him. Talk to me about that movie and why you decided on trying to uncover things that maybe nobody else knew before.
Well, first of all, I was commissioned to make that film by South African Television called MNET that was doing a series of documentaries on African personalities, seven different African personalities, some of whom were leaders, including Nelson Mandela and Sankara. And the emperor was one of the individuals featured in the series. But the emperor, because he came to power as regent in 1916-1917 and lost his power in 1974-75, he covered essentially 20th century Ethiopian history. So he's a very complicated individual. Because of the decades that he was in power, he has multiple legacies. When I was growing up, and I was growing up during the 70s, during the revolution, there was a particular vision or a particular perspective of the emperor that was presented, reducing him to essentially just one out of many different components of the individual that he was, of the leader that he was. So when I was commissioned to make this documentary, what I tried to do is to stay away from ideology or a particular perspective of looking at the emperor, and searched for individuals that actually worked with him, that actually had encounters with him. I wasn't looking for people that liked him or disliked him. I was looking for people that had experience with him, as opposed to individuals, exactly, as opposed to people who are just writing based on hearsay or secondhand information. So the individuals that I talked
to. What's the most interesting thing you think you found out in your research?
That he is extremely layered, and his legacy is extremely layered. And for example, his biggest legacy was bringing education, modern education, into the country.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that was important to him when he came to power as regent. He was interested in bringing technology to Ethiopia. And when Ethiopia was invaded by Italy in the mid-30s, he returned to power in 1941. The realization that he came to was that because we're not participants of the Industrial Revolution, we were affected by the Italian army. We were decimated by the Italian army because we weren't able to build airplanes that essentially mustard gassed the population when Mussolini's forces entered Addis Ababa. So when he resumed, when he was restored to power in 41, for example, one of the things that he did was establish the Air Force. And by the time he lost his power, it was probably one of the strongest air forces in the country. So it was important to him.
And he even lent out his forces to help fight for freedom in other areas of Africa.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He was playing a very again complicated game during the time of his reign, because immediately after the war, the Cold War started, and then there was the push and pull from the East and the West. And what he did not want to do was necessarily ally himself with one side or the other, because, again, that would make him vulnerable. For example, when he formed his army, he had Swedes, he had Indians, he had Americans, he had French, people all helping him in different parts of the army, the Air Force, the Navy, so that one country did not dominate his policies.
Yes. Well, that's why I thought that quote from the United Nations speech he gave was important to read. That kind of gives you an insight to his philosophies. Let me just tell the audience a little bit more about you and your work.
Sure.
Your work has been the Best Picture nominee at MNET's All African Film Awards. You've won the Walter Mosley Award for Best Documentary, the Locarno Film Festival Production Grant. You won the Paulin Vieira Merit Award for Outstanding Work in Cinema. The Fonz Sood Writing Grant. So you have so many accolades under your belt. Talk to me a little bit about the film Dead Weight. I wasn't able to see the whole thing. I did see the trailer and I read about it, but it's dealing with some heavy issues of immigration and past and memories and the woman. Talk to the audience a little bit about Dead Weight.
In the mid-90s, an Ethiopian woman who was tortured in Ethiopia in the mid-70s during a period of repression and political turmoil. She was working at a hotel in Atlanta, and she encountered a man who also was working in the hotel, and the man happened to be the person who was responsible for torturing her in Ethiopia. And she took him to court here and had him extradited to Ethiopia, where he faced charges for the crime that he committed. Dead Weight is inspired by such an encounter. What would happen if a person has been tortured, who has been tortured, moves on, goes to a different country, lives there for 20, 30 years, wanting to forget what has happened to him or to her, and then is confronted by by a terrible past?
That happens a lot with people. I mean, in terms of the issue of immigration, and moving away, the issue of loss, maybe losing family, losing memory, but also a chance to make something new, an escape, idea of
Absolutely.
Escaping. And then the thing comes back at you, and you're like, where do you go now? I thought this was over with.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely, and what the thing that happens to her is in this story, which is very different from the actual incident. In this story, the man that she encounters, meaning her torturer, is transformed. He is not the monster that he was. He is now an incredible, responsible citizen, and also a wonderful father.
Yeah, and people are wondering, I can see from the film, the part that why is she interacting with this person? But that brings the issue of transformation. Do you think people are possible transformation? I mean, think about a Nazi person or slaves meeting a plantation owner after a certain period, and or their family owned slaves, but now they're helping, wonderful things. Or somebody killed your son. So the idea of forgiveness. The first question is,
are
people capable of transforming? And secondly,
do
people
need to
give, and why?
I couldn't hear part of what you were saying, but I think asking me about the idea of, is it possible to transform?
Transformation, do you think people can transform to something better?
I think both can happen at the same time. They are who they were, and they are somebody new, and that's what makes it very complicated to do something about it. I mean, must a man face the person who committed crimes, must he face the law? Absolutely. But is he the same person? Probably not. I mean, the man who committed the torture in the story was 16, 17 years old at that time.
And being controlled by, a regime in a sense, it wasn't, did he have a choice to be the torturer?
Well, yes and no. I mean, yes, he had a choice because he could have said, no, I won't do this, but then face grave, situation for himself. So at the end of the day, to what extent are we ready to sacrifice ourselves, our lives, our situation in order to stop committing atrocities? That's another discussion.
Now,
that's another topic.
That's a whole other issue. What about the idea of forgiveness? Do you think forgiveness is good for people? Because a lot of people think if you don't forgive, you can't go on and release your spirit and be happier. And then there are other people like, I'm never going to forgive. He killed my son, or he raped my daughter, or, she stole money from me or something. And so there's the people on both sides of the fence. What do you think about the idea of forgiveness?
I think I can have a conversation with you conceptually, but if I were the person that was affected, how would I react? That's a different matter. I mean, for me, I would connect it more with a scar, for example. If you had an operation and the scar is always there, but it sort of fades after a while. Is that forgiveness?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. Is that, moving away? Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think that's a complicated issue.
Well, I think you're a complicated filmmaker, because let's talk about your film, Tumult, and the idea of that's almost historical, too, and the young man, Yusuf, I believe is the character. And he's complicated also, because he comes from an aristocracy, and yet he's trying to pull away from that. But then he finds one of the reviews I was reading that a farm maker was mad because he didn't want a revolution. He didn't necessarily need freedom. He just needed to get paid and get fed, and all this revolutionary stuff was messing up, the flow of his life. So you're a complicated filmmaker. Talk to the audience about Yosef and Tumult and that story there.
Okay. Again, that was in December 1960. There was an attempted coup d'etat against the emperor. And the individuals who tried to overthrow the emperor were part of the Imperial Guard, the head of the Imperial Guard, meaning the person who's responsible to protect the emperor, and intellectuals, many of whom were educated abroad, and the most famous one being Germán Menoy, who was educated at Colombia. And his brother was the head of the Imperial Guard. So it was two brothers essentially spearheading the coup d'etat. Now, again, the film that I made is inspired by that incident, but it's not a historical film. And the question that I wanted to pose is, if someone is trying to bring about change for a group of people or a community that is not his own, and then the other person on the other side has the power, the life and death, to essentially pass judgment on this person, what would happen? Mm-hmm. Essentially, this the character in the film is trying to bring about change through force.
Yes,
external.
But then there's a change within that occurs.
Exactly.
So again, you're dealing with the idea of transformation. See, so you're complicated too.
But
you know,
I
it's
think
like
the thing
a little
is,
circle there.
Well, because it's very easy to just say this person is progressive and that person is reactionary, and then there's no conversation and there's no story. That's just like sitting down and watching a game where somebody wins and somebody loses. For me, it's human stories are not about winning and losing, but about experiencing.
Yes, there's so many layers in there. Let's talk about your layers. Why film? Why not a lawyer? Why not a doctor? You know, why not an astronaut? Why did you go into film?
Most Ethiopians, when they go to college, especially if they go abroad, they study business, they study law, they study medicine. Business administration for about a year. I took a year of accounting, statistics, and economics. And I soon, realized that that was not for me. And then I studied journalism. And then in the last semester of my undergraduate year, I took two film history classes. I always enjoyed films when I was a kid, but when I was growing up in Ethiopia, it never occurred to me there were no role models. There was just one film that was made by an Ethiopian filmmaker that was Guma, and the name of the filmmaker is Michel Papatakis, that I saw when I was a kid, but I never connected that with making a film. So it was
a slow move.
For me, film is attractive because, like journalism, you could investigate, but like literature and like art, you could transform it into something imaginative. So that's why I enjoy films.
So now you're working on new film up and making them. I want to give a shout out to EFCAT, the African Film Festival in Tarifa, Spain. That's how I connected with you to Philip. I want to say hi to Philip. Thank you so much for connecting the two of us, Iman and I, together. And you're going to be presenting another film there. Talk to us about that new project.
Yes. Hello. I don't know if Philip is on the line. Hello, Philip. The new project that I'm working on is entitled...
No,
he's
not
then...
on the line. I just wanted to tell thank you for connecting us. He may be listening, so we'll find out later.
Very good. The new project that I'm working on is a narrative feature, and it's, based on a historical incident. This historical incident is the so-called Spanish influenza or the Spanish pandemic of 1918. This pandemic is the worst epidemic or pandemic in human history. Between 50 to 100 million people died worldwide. In the United States, just in one year, about 500 to 700,000 people died. But because influenza is not sexy, people don't really know much about it. The film that I'm making...
influenza is definitely not something that, is sexy. But, there was a big, huge famine in Ethiopia also many people felt that Haile Selassie wasn't paying attention to, but famine and illness are a serious problem. We have the issue of HIV/AIDS.
We can talk about the famine later on as well. But in 1980, Ethiopia, just as many parts of the world, including Antarctica, was devastated by this influenza. The film that I'm making is not a medical film, but it's about two small communities one divided community. And it's inspired by a story that was told to me by a great aunt who survived the influenza. Essentially, a community finds out that there is this devastating pandemic that's slowly moving towards them. And the leader of the community decides to quarantine himself, his family members, and anybody who was interested in joining him up on a mountain. Most people thought that that was a ludicrous idea, and they said, because if God wants to kill you, he'll kill you whether you're on a mountain or,
a
valley, it doesn't matter. So he goes up there.
I think today was supposed to be the end of the world. Did you know
exactly.
that, Iman? Today was supposed to be the end of the world, so thank you. I just want to say thank you to everybody who's listened if today is the last day. But go ahead.
So they quarantine themselves, and then they, because it's not very far, because they could, you know, with binoculars, they could see their village, their community. So what happens is once the pandemic strikes, they watch their community perish in front of them. So some of them are unable to witness this and leave the quarantine. And others want to come from the affected areas to join the quarantine, but of course they've placed armed guards, so they can't do that. So what the film is about, and it's told through the story of two young people, a man and a woman, who are divided. The woman is up on the mountain, and the man is up, down at the village. With the haves and the haves not? Is it possible?
The haves and the have not. Yes.
There you go. So is it possible to survive, to witness destruction and maintain a healthy life? What is the connection with the people that have and the people that don't have? And that's what the film explores.
Well, I think that's an interesting idea. Can you walk by a homeless person and not give money? Can you interrupt a domestic violence situation on the street? Can you, help a child who needs food? When you have something, how generous, the idea of generosity, and then when you don't give, how does that affect your humanity? How does that affect your psychology? Do you carry some guilt around because you have? And if you have, I mean, is that your fault or were you born into it? There's so many issues that can block you.
Absolutely.
Well, Carlos is actually in the chat room from the Teresa Film Festival. I just want to say thank you, Carlos, for tuning in. For those of you who are not familiar with Yaman, you can check out thegoalfilms.com, ZAGOLfilms.com. Also, if you're not familiar with FCAT, I'm going to put the URL in the chat room here. It's FCAT.ES/FCAT. You can check that out and learn more about the film festival there. How did you connect with the film festival, Yaman? Was it just something you researched or somebody approached you?
No, actually, I was showing Dead Weight at FESPACO, the big African film festival in Burkina Faso in March, and I met the team from Tarifa, and had wonderful conversation with Carlos. And he asked me to submit the script, which I did, and then he invited me to the producers' conference at Tarifa.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Joy.
Twilight Revelations, the documentary on Emperor Haile Selassie, is playing at the Schomburg on Thursday in New York City for those people who are nearby, Thursday evening at 7 p.m. as part of the Sheba
wonderful.
Film Festival.
Okay, great. Excellent. So that's something people can check out. And also, I had Dr. Khalil Gibran Muhammad. He's going to be the new director at the Schomburg. He was on the show. But we want to talk a little bit about the issue of the famine in Ethiopia.
Yes.
You wanted to make some kind of comment about that. I just brought it up.
Yes, I mean the famine was essentially the last nail on the emperor's coffin in terms of his regime. There's been famines in Ethiopia, periodic famines, as there, for example, if you go back to the Bible in terms of the 7 years, after every 7 years there's a famine. Joseph went to Egypt, etc., etc. So there's a cyclical famine that happens not just in Ethiopia but in the area. And what happened in 1973 was that there was a famine in northwestern Ethiopia, and hundreds of thousands of people were affected by this famine. And what the government did not do was to essentially share the news with the public at large so that it could be, individuals, communities, organizations could sufficiently address. So that essentially was, there was an outcry once it was discovered. And it did not help the regime in any way, obviously.
What is your favorite part about doing films? Is it the writing? Is it the filmmaking? Is it directing, editing? What's your favorite part?
Actually, working with actors and editing and writing.
you like actors. I'm glad to hear that. I used to be an actor, because some people, you know, feel the directors are like mean, you know, go this way, turn left, stand straight, you know, get on your mark, you know what I mean? Stand in the
light. I just feel that without actors, you don't have a movie. Just marionettes. You need to be able to speak with them, because they are essentially the vehicle through which your story is revealed.
Do you take a lot of takes, or is it like you want to get it in one take? You allow them to rehearse, or do you?
I'm a firm believer in rehearsal, and also because I work with non actors, because there aren't. The films that I made here. The actors needed to speak Amharic, so there weren't that many trained, artists or actors.
Yes.
So
yes.
We needed to rehearse a lot.
Okay, good. I like to hear that. I'm happy to hear that. Well, I wish you much success with your upcoming project, and thank you, Carlos and Philip, for connecting us. And our listeners, we may have some other filmmakers from the festival on, so just stay tuned to Facebook and also to my Twitter account to hear announcements. But thank you so much, Yaman, for coming on. I should say, Amasa Ganalu, yeah?
Thank you very much, Amasa Ganalu. And thank you for having me on your show, John.
Okay, you have a wonderful Saturday, Yaman.
Bye-bye, you too.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.